Sunday afternoon edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. We are here to discuss a Ducks victory 5-1 over the Edmonton Oilers last night in Edmonton. Coming at you a little later than anticipated. Seems like there's a wedding every weekend, and Jake was out of town. It's okay.
This time it was me.
We're not going to hold it against him, only a little bit. And so we're recording live on this beautiful, sunny Sunday afternoon here in Southern California. What better time
to
record? There's really not a whole lot to break down about last night's game, but there are a few fun little quirky things that we can go over. So Jake, talk to us about the wedding. How was the drive?
What? Wedding was a blast. Drive out there was a breeze on Friday night after we recorded the wonderful podcast after that Flames game. Drive back today was a little bit worse because everyone was out there basically stopping to look at all the poppies.
The poppies?
Coming back from Temecula. What? Haven't you seen everyone post on Instagram about the poppies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it was basically right when you hit the spot where there were all those poppy flowers, traffic all backed up, and it added probably a good 30 or 40 minutes to my drive.
It's kind of sad that as soon as you made the Instagram reference, I knew immediately what you were talking about.
Yep. Wedding was amazing, though. It was for my cousin and now his wife, and super great time, really happy for them, and it was a really fun time. So it was a great night, had a lot of fun, did a little bit of dancing in the process.
That's good.
So yeah.
That's good. That's good. We are happy for you and your family. Okay, let's get into last night's game, though. A couple of news items that will foreshadow one of the weird events of last night's game. So, obviously, Troy Terry out with injury after blocking that shot against Calgary. That would mean that the Ducks would have to do, once again, some roster shuffling. And so, last minute, you know what's interesting is there's actually no media traveling with the Ducks right now. So, both Elliot Tiefert and Eric Stevens are not...
They're basically doing what we do, but also adding in that they have sources within the organization.
It cracks me up only a little bit because that's just like the news organizations are. It's like, you know what, guys, just stay home. It's okay.
Did you notice that Eric Stevens says he's working on a few things, which interesting.
He is working on a few things, which I would hope so. But so before last night's game, Sam Carrick and Chase DeLeo called up from San Diego, and the goals had just played the night before, so this must have been very last minute in order to get them up to Edmonton.
I'm curious if there's an injury that we're not... So obviously we all know that Troy Terry was injured, and instantly Elliot Tiefert said that Chase Leo, right after we went off air pretty much on Friday, and incorrectly called, first off because he was hurt, that Kevin Waugh would be the one to be called.
Yeah, as soon as that was announced, I guess the Chase DeLeo thing was announced Friday night and then Sam Carrick Saturday, but yeah. I was pretty mad at myself for getting that wrong because usually we do a pretty good job with that. So I want to just apologize to the listeners here for that.
Hashtag Felix
that
was
mistake.
Wrong.
That's a big
hashtag
oversight.
Felix was wrong. But there has to be something more that not only because of everything, I've gone into this plenty of times with the fact that emergency call-ups and that someone has to be hurt to be able to come into the lineup if that's the situation. And so the fact that Carrick was playing has to mean that someone else is hurt. And if you look, Daniel Sprong was scratched again, which is exactly what happened last time. So I'm wondering, and you don't call up a guy who had played last night to play in the game that played last night just because you weren't happy with how a guy performed.
Well, that's the thing is that Ryan Kesler is not listed on injured reserve, even though, I mean, he may play one more game this season.
He's on injured. He's injured. Even if he's scratched.
Well,
he's not a healthy scratch.
Yes, but officially he's not listed on injured reserve. Neither is Josh Manson. And so the Ducks have a lot of guys on their roster right now, on their official roster. Not a lot of guys who can actually play. But so anyway, Sam Carrick called up, Chase DeLeo called up, and Jake Dotchin also, we're going to get into that in a second. But so the Ducks basically featuring a skeleton crew Saturday night. I mean, really, I was watching the Ducks Instagram story where they had someone filming the guys walking out one by one onto the ice. And I just thought to myself, man, am I watching the San Diego Goals official account?
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting close. And our good buddy John Broadbent, who writes about the goals for our site and also has his new blog that he's put together, Defend the Nest. Go check it out. It's more in-depth, every game, that type of stuff on the goals. He's not too happy with how all these call-ups are happening, but you got to ice a full roster in the NHL. There's all those rules for that, but, I mean, this is depleting the goals roster as they're coming down the home stretch here.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is, and there's really not much the Ducks can do because it seems like every other game someone gets hurt. This is kind of the point of having a farm team, is so you can still ice an NHL roster. Anyway, so also I should mention that it was John Gibson starting in net. I believe that his last start, so Ryan Miller was in on Friday. So the Ducks are kind of managing his minutes down the stretch. You know, Ryan Kesler may just be completely done. Ryan Getzlaff may be done as well with those muscle spasms. So they're kind of just massaging their way to the end here, you know, with managing their veterans' minutes.
Yeah, and it makes sense. Which is smart. Because, I mean, yeah, you want to see what you have in your farm system, because as much as these guys are doing well in San Diego, you want to give them a shot. I mean, Chase DeLeo, for all intents and he's been called up once this season and didn't get in a game. He was scratched and went back down to the goals. And so basically he hasn't been with the Ducks all season. He's been on the goals all season and has put together a pretty nice season down there. So this is a way to reward him for that. This is also a way to see what you have in him and see if you think that he can have a chance at making an NHL roster next year, or if you kind of need to reassess, maybe bring in someone that could fit that role that maybe you had penciled Chase DeLeo in kind of stepping up into.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Sam Carrick has had a very, very good season for the goals. I mean, he is their leading point scorer with 56 points in 57 games. A very deserved call-up. And he is a guy that I'm curious to see what he can do at the NHL level. I mean, he's obviously give me 1 second here.
Yeah.
Sorry, did that just black out for a second?
A quick second.
I was getting a call from a collections agency because, of course.
They're coming for
just
you.
I just paid my bill online, and, of course, they're still calling me because that's how these things work. Sorry about that, folks. Anyway, back to what I was saying. Sam Carrick, 56 points in 57 games this season for the goals. And, I mean, he's no spring chicken. He's 27 years of age, which by NHL standards, you're not really a prospect anymore at that point. But he's been very productive in the AHL, so I am curious to see maybe next season what he could do. It's something to monitor. Again, this is all on the margins. Even for a guy like Chase DeLeo, who I believe is also 24, or I think he may be a little older than that.
No, I think he's a little 23. He's a little bit younger.
23. So he's going to be 24 by the time next season starts. We're just about. So, you know, these guys are kind of on the fringes of being called prospects at this point. But that being said, like you mentioned, if they can contribute in any way, now is a good time to find out. And, you know, ultimately that takes priority over the AHL team, which sucks for fans of the goals, but that's kind of just the way this thing works.
Yep, and I think one thing that's kind of going to be cool for Chase DeLeo is if he does stay in the lineup coming back for Wednesday's game in Calgary, you're going to have the La Mirada native, someone who went to, obviously, I've mentioned this a couple times, went to the same high school I did, is friends with one of our listeners of the podcast, Chad Lawrence. He's going to get a home game, and that's going to be a really, really cool moment because I think he only played a couple games for Winnipeg. I don't know where they all were, but I would assume that this would probably be his first game in Southern California.
Yeah, so
as in the NHL.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's once again giving a Southern California native an opportunity. Obviously, he was traded for Nick Cardillas, who is an Irvine native. And so they're just giving guys opportunities. It's good to see. Okay, let's get into the game, though. Let's just talk about this off the top. So basically about, I believe it was 5 to 10 minutes into the first period.
I think it was less. I think it was three.
Well, yeah. So Jake Dotchin takes a shift, plays a full shift. And then after that, I believe he plays maybe 30 seconds. I don't have the stats. It doesn't totally matter. But the refs approach Anaheim's bench and say, hey, Jake Dotchin, you're listed as a scratch. You're not on the roster.
Yep.
This is truly the most beer league moment you'll see in the NHL. A guy not listed on the roster just suddenly appears on the ice. And so because of that, Jake Dotchin was forced to leave the game. And there's no penalty for it. There's no minor penalty for it.
Yeah.
But
which is interesting.
But at the same time, the penalty is that you lose a guy for the rest of the game because it happened so early. The Ducks had five defensemen the rest of the night.
But what if you end up playing a guy that's scratched, and let's say Terry wasn't actually ineligible to play, so you had a 20 or however many men roster, mm-hmm. and he played, would that be a penalty?
I don't know.
This is a weird thing where usually I know all this different type of stuff or spend time researching it. I haven't really actually had a chance to look into it.
It's pretty cut and dry. You can't have a guy who's scratched can't play. Playing. That's just usually how these things go.
But it's weird that the fact that he did play, that there's no penalty associated with it.
I don't know. If that makes sense. I mean, to me, the penalty is that he has to leave and that they're down a man and there's no replacement.
Well, yeah, that's my point is, what if you had that, if he was just an extra guy and you tried to sneak him in? Because this isn't that situation, but I'm just hypothetically, you tried to sneak him in.
I just don't think that hypothetical would happen, because if you had enough eligible players, you would play them.
True.
So
true.
So a lot of people on Twitter responded to this saying, is this a stealth tank move by Bob Murray? To which I would answer, I don't think having Jake Dodgson plucked from your roster really kind of tanks the game for you. All due respect to Jake Dodgson.
No, it just feels like an incompetency type of move. Like, this is, there's a reason why I cannot think of this ever happening, really ever.
Teams, you know, all NHL teams play 82 games a season. And so you put that together, and that's 2,542 games in a season. This doesn't ever happen. Out of over almost 3,000 times a year, this doesn't happen. And so for it to happen once is pretty impressive.
It's insane.
Pretty impressive.
It's insane.
Now, given it is unsurprising that it would happen to the team with a guy who is not a head coach by trade, is just kind of standing in until they get a new head coach. It's not surprising, which I guess leads, and I should have done more research before the podcast, but I really should have checked who actually submits the final roster before the game starts.
I think it's
it
the
has
coach.
To be the head.
It
the has
head
to be the head coach.
But then again, but Bob Murray walks over to Mark Morrison after it happens and like talks to him a little bit.
I think
about
that what
it.
Cracks so me up about if... this is that Bob Murray did not at all seem upset. He just kind of laughed it off. Like, ah, ha, ha.
He was like, ah, crap.
Guess we lose Jake Dodgson.
Yep.
So anyway,
yep. Guess he's
that
gone.
Was kind of the highlight of the game because it was that, just so crazy.
That was the biggest talking point because it's something like you said. It never happens.
Literally never happens. I mean, teams get this right every single game except the Ducks. What a way to go out. But anyway, there's actually some real positives to talk about in this game. Get to. 4:49 left in the first period. Your boy, none other than Corey Perry, gets the Ducks on the board 1-0 off a nice little zone entry, you could call it, by Chase DeLeo. Actually, not on that specific play, but he was having a nice shift. Adam Henrik brings it into the zone, gets it over to Corey Perry, who gets a wrist shot on net, and it hits Mikko Koskinen in the glove and then just kind of goes in anyway. But still, a nice shot by Corey Perry. Sixth goal of the year.
Yeah, hashtag Perry is still good, you know? he's. I mean, honestly, though, I think since he's come back from injury, I think that I was one of the few kind of on his still thinking he was good last year, but I think it would be I would be out of my right mind to say that he was still kind of where he was at
the caliber
last year was a big step back from where he was even 2 years ago, where I thought he was just getting unlucky.
Right.
It seems like knee surgery has done him pretty well, because he 10 points in 29 games, six goals. I think he's looked good. I think it maybe took him about 7 or 8 games since coming back from knee injury to really get back in the swing of things, but I think once he did, I think he's looked dangerous, looked good.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be a little fair here in that he is on a 17-goal pace over 82 games. So, I mean, it's really hard to judge this in a vacuum, because obviously he's coming back from an injury, stepping into a kind of not really a perfect situation, right? The season already winding down, injuries. Yeah. But he hasn't lit the world on fire. So, really,
but he's looked fine.
He's looked fine. I'm going to wait to – with him, I'm just in wait-and-see mode. I'm going to see next season what he looks like, because – Give him a few more months of rehab, training, kind of strengthen the knee back up, and then from there, really hit the ground running in training camp. So I'm not really all the way sold one way or the other on him. I'm just going to wait and see. One guy, though, who I'm definitely getting more sold on by the minute, Ricard Raquel. First goal of the night for him early in the second period. Goes top corner on Mikko Koskinen off of a nice play by Jakob Silfverberg to kind of draw in the defenders off of a turnover, and then gets it over to Raquel, who, again, maybe this is just confirmation bias, but in a situation where most guys would have one-timed the puck, Raquel in that left circle takes a second to load it up and then goes high on Koskinen. So it's a really nice shot by Ricard Raquel. It's that patented release of his where it looks like he's really just only using his wrists. And it was a really nice goal by Raquel, who had a really good game.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it was a nice shot. It was a great play. I mean, this is kind of what we talked about, where it seemed like Raquel was... Part of it was just him being snake bit, and I think that we're starting to see a bit of a course correction. I think part of it is he's found some chemistry playing with Jakob Silfverberg since basically Randy Carlyle was fired and that line was put together, and it seems like those two have really enjoyed playing with one another, and whoever you put between them, whether it be Adam Henrique, whether it be Devin Shore, whether it be Sam Steele, whoever it is, those two are really working well with whoever's at center. And I mean, it kind of makes sense if you think about it, because they're both pretty good in their own zone, especially Silfverberg, and they both have good shots. So if you get someone, especially like a Sam Steele, who's a pretty good distributor, I mean, Sam Steele, we've talked about it, his best ability is just his vision on the ice. He doesn't make the flashy play, but he's able to distribute the puck to different guys, and I think that him being between Silfverberg and Raquel is working right now for that reason. I think Henrique works, but Henrique isn't as much a distributor as he is a shooter. Sam Steele isn't exactly a shooter. He's more a guy that's going to be looking for that pass, making the right play. And so I think that we're seeing success from that line because of that.
Absolutely. And I think that, to your point, with Raquel, you know, I think he works better next to a guy who's responsible at 5-on-5, because I think sometimes why he's struggled, carrying his own line is because he's not necessarily a play driver by himself. I think that he's a guy who kind of likes to leak out a little bit in the defensive zone, and then from there, once you get him the puck with the head of steam, then he can carry it into the offensive zone. So I think that him and Silfverberg are a good duo in that respect, and I am curious to see what they could potentially look like. I mean, it's crazy how productive Silfverberg has been since he's been kind of unchained from Ryan Kessler and Andrew Cogliano. I mean, I know you were very skeptical of the signing, but they may have kind of unlocked a version of Jakob Silfverberg, not by re-signing him, but just by subtracting guys from his line.
Well, and that's something we've kind of talked about in the last year or two about Jakob Silfverberg, is one of the biggest downfalls for him is that he's kind of pigeonholed into that role. And when they talked about different points in time in the beginning of the season, the fact that that checking line was kind of dead, and they ended up kind of putting it back together after that. But they talked about putting Silfverberg in a better role for him. I think they had him with Adam Henrique at various points in the season to get him away from Kessler. And it just felt like Randy Carlyle specifically was too set on the old reliable and what was safe. And so we weren't able to see Silfverberg. And I think that that was...
You don't say that Randy Carlyle would not venture out and try different things and really I'm really shocked by that one. You're gonna have to explain. Yeah. You're gonna have to defend
exactly.
that position.
It's shocking. It's shocking. But I think that that was the biggest downfall of this season for the Ducks, is getting caught into old situations. It's actually funny thinking about it now that that is how the forwards were going, but now thinking about how the defense, they were so set in their way of splitting it up and doing something different as compared to going against something that worked and consistently worked.
Well, you'll recall to the first portion of the season in training camp where, you know, they were putting Silfverberg on his off wing next to Adam Henrique.
Yeah.
And they were trying all these different things. And, you know, we were cautiously optimistic, but I remember very much prefacing and qualifying every change they made with, well, you know, I'm going to judge these changes if they stick with them, right? If they're not going to abandon them at the first turbulence, at the first rough waters. And that's exactly what ended up happening. And that's kind of where the season blew up for the Ducks. And I mean, obviously injuries, this and that. But so Jakob Silfverberg, by the way, after last night, up to 40 points in 71 games. So now he's tied last season's production, which is funny because it's in six less games. And last season he had 17 goals and 23 assists for 40 points. This season, he has 23 goals and 17 assists for 40 points. So Jakob Silfverberg is nothing if not consistent.
And for everyone that has been giving Ricard Raquel a bit of shtick this season, he's up to 41 points, 18 goals, 23 assists. Mm-hmm. He could very well break 20 goals again, which in a season that he's only shooting, for instance, he's only shooting 9% this
season. And that's after being on a bender, you know, in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and so he was up to 14% last year with the 34 goals, 18% the season before. So two seasons ago, when he had 33 goals, it was maybe a bit of unluck or a bit of luck going his way. Last year, even though the shooting percentage went down, his goals went up, which meant that he was starting to make it a little bit more sustainable. And then this year, he just kind of got bit by basically the fact that he was getting so lucky in the past 2 years. Puck luck kind of turned the other way on him, and that's bound to happen. You're gonna regress to the mean, and you're gonna have seasons where you're gonna have good luck, seasons where you're gonna have bad luck, and part of it is due to just that, pure luck. Part of it is due to a couple various things with scoring chances, but like we looked at with his rates, I don't know if I'm willing to say that there's a big drop off in his play this season. I think it's just kind of a little bit unlucky, and so he's gonna end up with 20 goals, and I think he's poised to go into next season ready to produce again and become a 30 goal scorer.
Right. I mean, I think that we know what Ricard Raquel can do, and this season has just been extremely bizarre. But on the topic of Ricard Raquel, second goal of the night for him halfway through the second period off of a really nice play by Sam Steele. Corbinian Holzer gets a point shot through traffic. Well, it's not really a point shot because the Oilers were packing up so much it turned into a shot from the circles. But Sam Steele is able to make a nice play to redirect. Maybe it was a shot pass. You know, redirects it with the one touch over to Ricard Raquel, who's able to just tap it home. Awful, atrocious, putrid, whatever you want to call it, defense by the Oilers on this play, but it's still a nice kind of read and react by Sam Steele to have the awareness to touch it over to Raquel for his second goal of the night. And I don't know. I mean, Sam Steele, this is something that we were talking about in our Slack chat late last night, but he is not a guy to me who has a ton of tools. I don't think he's very fast. I don't think he has a very hard shot, but he is a smart player, and you saw it on this goal.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that's his biggest aspect, and I think that's what made him so successful in junior hockey was his smart.
He could just kind of outsmart other guys. I mean, sorry to cut you off here, but there, I kind of wanted to point this out. You know, there was a really good podcast early in the season with Craig Custance, and he interviewed, Daryl Belfry, the skills coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs, really famous skills coach, and what he talked about when evaluating players, especially guys going from junior to the NHL, is just looking at all of their goals and asking, okay, is that a junior goal or a goal you can score in the NHL? And he said, you know, a lot of the times in junior, you can get a goal just by being smarter than the other guy, by just sneaking in behind the defense, because you're just going to get that goal. You don't get that one in the NHL. So when you peel those away, then you can understand how a guy will translate at the next level. Yeah. And I feel like with Sam Steele, we're kind of seeing that a little bit. Anyway, sorry. Had to throw that in there.
It's all good. It's all good. But I think that, so basically, I think that he's starting to figure out his way in the NHL of how to score and how to produce those goals.
Right.
And I think we're starting to see that.
Yeah. And I think that with him, you know, there's kind of different schools of thought where a guy who maybe doesn't have the physical gifts or tools, are you willing to bet on them a little bit more because you know they already understand the game very well? And so if they can just work on those aspects, they can become even better. That's something that you can just, you can't teach a guy hockey sense. You can't teach a guy, you know, I mean, you can to some degree, but some guys just have higher hockey IQs than others. And so the other stuff you can fill in.
And I think that's one thing we saw from Steele in his progression as a junior player even, because, I mean, you got to remember, he was taken with the last pick of the first round. He was taken late, and it's because he didn't really have that impressive of a draft season. He looked like a good player, but it's not like he was considered one of the top guys. And then it was after that season that he started to make the adjustments and started to kind of adjust his game to be able to produce more points in junior hockey. Part of it is due to him being older and getting older than everyone else. Part of it is due to his game evolving and progressing and becoming better. And so I think maybe we're going to see a similar step in his game next season. I'm not projecting him making this huge jump, but it wouldn't surprise me if we see him, just simply because of, also, you see guys as they get older, they get better and better when they're in their early 20s. But I also think from what we've seen historically from Sam Steele, I think we could very easily see a big jump in his game next season.
Absolutely.
Or a decent jump. Let's go there.
Raquel then earns a natural hat trick with just under 5 minutes left in the second period. Jakob Söderberg, another nice zone entry, just gets it over to Raquel from the same spot where he scored his first goal. Just rips one from the left circle. This one beats Koskinen far side. It's a nice release by Raquel, and it's kind of a tricky release to read, but this is a soft goal by Koskinen. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Koskinen was very, very bad last night. By the way, he's been, for some reason, the Oilers decided that it was okay to let Peter Chiarelli re-sign him as a parting gift, whatever you want to call it. Anyway, and so Raquel gets his natural hat trick. It's just a really good night for him, a feel-good night. The Ducks now have two games left. He has two games to score two goals to hit 20. So, I mean, we've already talked about Raquel. We're not going to belabor that. Anything else you want to add, though?
How bad is that Mikko Koskinen contract?
It's awful.
Going to look?
It's truly mind-boggling that they would allow him to sign that contract. But when you hear Bob Nicholson talk about Tobias Rieder, you then understand why things are the way they are in Edmonton.
Yeah. They paid him $4.5 million for the and starting next season for 3 years.
Three more years. But the thing that's interesting about the Oilers is that there was a stat on the broadcast about how they are going to be the third team featuring two 100-point scorers to not make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's insane.
Now, Jake, I want to ask you this, a piece of hockey trivia. So they're going to become the third team. Can you name the other two teams?
Ooh. So, what was the actual...
So, the stat is the Oilers, after this season, will become the third team in NHL history to feature two 100-point scorers and not make the postseason. So, can you name the other two teams? This is... I mean,
Dallas,
I would... I'm not...
Dallas Stars?
I'm not going to blame you for getting this wrong. No, Dallas Stars is incorrect. You have to go further back.
Oh, way further back. Pittsburgh?
Yes! Wow! But what year, though?
99.
Incorrect.
That's a pure guess.
You got Pittsburgh right. So Pittsburgh in 89-90, I think, is the year.
Okay.
And then can you name the other one?
The Kings.
No, it's the 87-88 Quebec Nordiques. So...
Oh. Well, it makes sense that it's in the 80s when everyone...
Well, yeah. I mean, you should have thought about that before making a guess. But... So Pittsburgh Penguins, though... I mean, here's the thing. The Penguins... didn't make the playoffs that season, but then they went on to go back to back, you know, when 91 and 92, and then the Quebec Nordiques eventually became the Avalanche, who were a dynasty. And so, I mean,
this Oilers team,
I mean, that's kind of the scary thought, is that this Oilers team, as poorly managed as they've been, they don't have to do a whole lot to become really, really good again.
I mean, they do.
I don't think so. I mean, they just have to put together a roster that isn't just utter trash.
So
that's a pretty low bar to clear.
As we're now talking about the Oilers in depth, I figured I should put this on there. I have the Oilers cap friendly page up on our screen right now. They have a lot of money tied up in bad players.
Milan Lucic is obviously a big one. And
Sam Gagner is taking up 3.15 for next year also. You have Sekera, who can't stay healthy but is playing, so he's taking up that cap at 5.5. Oscar
Klefbom's
a good player. But Adam Larsson, 4.167. Chris Russell at 4
Yeah,
mil
but look, but no, hold on.
Good.
I'm going to have to stop you there. You're not naming...
Chris Russell is not
well,
good.
Well, yeah, Chris Russell's not good. But, you know, $4 million for Adam Larsson, he's a...
A combined $8 million.
Yeah,
though,
but to me, Klefbom is actually not a problem. He's not a problem on their roster. Adam Larsson, he's fine. He's not a bad player. He just gets a very, very, very bad rap and because of the trade. But again, these are not pariah contracts. The pariah contract is Lucic. That is one that we have to agree on.
The issue is when you have all these defensemen making $3 to $4 million on your back end, that adds up.
Aren't contracts that they can't possibly get out of, though. All I'm saying is that the Oilers have the hardest thing to acquire. They really, really effed up by not being good while the guys like Draisaitl and McDavid were on their entry levels. But I mean, I am an Oilers optimist simply because of Draisaitl and McDavid. They just
they've made the playoffs once since they made the Cup final.
I have a sneaking suspicion that the next GM they're going to hire is actually going to be pretty good. The guys that are being rumored, I just have, I don't know, I have a feeling that they're going to figure it out quickly. Again, because the thing is, their needs aren't these overwhelming, you know, like existential problems. You know, they just need a second and third line. So anyway, that's enough Oilers talk. I am vaguely optimistic about them. Another team that I'm kind of optimistic about, now that we're just going a full tangent, I think Vancouver's going to be good in about 2-3 years.
Yeah, they need to get, I mean, Quinn Hughes coming in.
He looked good. He looked good in his debut.
Elias Pettersson is very, very good. Brock Besser's very good. They need to somehow get away from some of the bad contracts they've taken on. Getting good Branson out of there was good.
And they're going to get another lottery pick this year. Probably not going to be top five, but
top 10,
they're going to keep replenishing. And I don't know. If I were to project the 2022 Pacific Division standings, I think I would have Edmonton and Vancouver in the top three. Just saying.
Who's going to be better next season out of these three teams? The Ducks, the Canucks, or the Oilers?
Ooh. I think out of who's going to be the, should I rank them?
Rank them. Who's in terms of finished, or not in terms of play style or anything like that, where they're going to finish in the standings?
I think the Ducks are going to finish. I think that they're easily the favorite out of those three. Agreed. Think I would put the Oilers number two and Canucks number three.
I put Canucks number two simply because I don't trust the Oilers have Koskinen in goal still.
That is true. I mean, what I will say to that is the Canucks, although they have Markstrom and now Demko, I mean, we just have no idea really what to expect.
I think Markstrom's
he's fine.
I think he's good.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I just think that the Oilers, they just need a like passing grade offseason to be back. I also think that the Pacific Division, there's some teams that are, I mean, the Kings are going to go, the Kings I think are going to be just as bad next season. And I
the Kings are set up to where they are in the long haul.
And I'm growing a bit concerned about the Sharks for next season. But anyway,
is it the salary spicy cap? Is it the cap issues?
I think Carlson might not be back.
Are you starting to believe in my theory that they just don't have cap space to resign him?
It's not really about that. I just think that he might not play in the first round, and that may cost them their playoffs. It sounds like what's starting to be a pretty serious groin injury. They're going to play a Vegas team, which could easily beat them. And that's with Carlson. So now you remove Carlson from the equation, and you factor in that they have Martin Jones in net, who has been good in the playoffs, but we have no way of knowing which Martin Jones is going to show up. So, I mean, if they go out in the first round and it's not that close, I have a harder time seeing Carlson coming back. I don't know. We'll see. Okay, so early in the third period, Devin Shore whips home a pretty nice wrist shot past, I'm forgetting, Anthony Stolarz, the backup who came in relief of Mikko Koskinen. Nice face-off win by Sam Carrick to win it directly back to Shore.
Really nice
shot. Yeah, and a nice shot by Devin Shore. And then late in the third period, Milan Lucic gets the 500th point of his NHL career by setting up Sam Gagne in the slot, who rips it home. 5-1, not really a whole lot else to write home about at the end throughout the end of this game. So 5-1, Ducks continue to kind of do a reverse tank in the end of the season. I mean, they're ending on a positive note, which I think Ducks fans should feel good about. But their lottery odds in terms of winning the draft lottery have now slipped down to 6.8%.
Yeah, I mean, way back when, it looked like the Ducks were pretty much a lock to finish in the fifth spot would have been my bet, but they could have gone down to probably the third spot if all things kind of fell right, second or third spot. Now it's kind of looking like, by looking at the standings, the Ducks, if things kind of fall right, they could end up in the fourth spot. Right now they're currently in the seventh spot, but the Rangers have two games in hand and are 1 point back of the Ducks. My bet would be the Ducks probably finish in that sixth spot right now. potentially they drop maybe to the fifth or fourth spot, but they're probably going to be in that sixth spot.
For the, you mean for the actual draft pick?
For the lottery. Okay. Odds.
Yeah, I think that it's not looking great for the lose for Hughes, but teams have had, I mean, the thing is that even though you have the best odds of winning the draft lottery, you're still at very best, you know, at about 1 in 5 or about less than 1 in 5. So it's still very feasible the Ducks win it. It's just not, you know, it's not getting any likelier with these wins. You know, they do play the Kings on Friday. And so, you know, that's a big one. And
they play the Flames on Wednesday.
So we'll see. The Kings, by the way, won last night. All right. So anything else you want to add on about this game?
I think Chase DeLeo played a pretty solid game.
Yeah, he looked fine.
He looked good. The line he played on overall, if you're looking at expected goal metrics, DeLeo, Henrique, Perry had a 0.45 expected goals for, 0.2 expected goal against. So that's pretty solid. I don't really know if I'm going to take away anything from the defense pairs just because.
Yeah.
Really a defense overall because you're playing with five defensemen. That kind of messes
And they basically had – they only had two guys who you figure are going to be on their roster next season.
Yeah. And then Raquel Raquel Steele and Silverberg played the highest minutes out of any line at 5-on-5 at 12:34, and they produced the most expected goals – or yes, the most expected goals for the night at 0.93 and had 0.48 expected goals against. So they were generating a fair amount of shot attempts and chances for while not allowing a whole lot against. So that's good.
And Sam Steele now up to 9 points in 20 games with the Ducks. So that's not terrible at all. All right. I think we do have some questions to get into.
Yep, we've got some. So for those of you listening to the recorded version of this show, whether that be on YouTube at Anaheim Calling SB Nation, you can search that on YouTube and find the channel. Please subscribe to the channel. If you hit that notification button, that bell, you'll get notified whenever a video goes up. And if you want to like the video, comment, whatever you want, I do look at the comments and I'll reply if it's something that needs a reply, but I do look at them. So if you have anything you want to say, go ahead and throw it in there. If you're listening to the recorded version on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, also thank you. But we do a live stream of this show at twitch.tv/AnaheimCallingSBN. Twitch.tv/AnaheimCallingSBN, where you can watch and interact with us live as we're going through this. You can throw questions into the chat that we'll answer on the show, and it's really a good time. It's a really good community. What are we calling them now? The callers are the people in the Twitch chat, fans of the show? Is that what we've officially decided?
I think they can be called whatever they want to be called.
Whatever you want to be called with. Maybe we'll put up a poll. So we'll put out a search. Start throwing in your names. If you don't like the callers, throw in something else. We'll put out a poll.
We'll figure something out.
Should be called. if you're in the Twitch chat, basically, or if you're watching on Twitch, you can support us in a way that's completely free to you. If you have Amazon Prime, you do get Twitch Prime. You just have to link your Amazon account to your Twitch account, and you just hit that subscribe button above Felix's head. Felix, point above your head. You hit that subscribe button, and it really helps us out. You do have to do it after 30 days if you are doing it through Twitch Prime. So if you could go ahead and do that, if you've done it, great. If you want to help us out, and with that, you get a special emote in the chat and a special badge next to your name. So the first question comes from STFU Shane. Question for the pod. What does the season look like if Randy Carlyle got fired after the first long losing streak?
That's a tough one. That's a very tough one. I think that the Ducks still miss the playoffs, but I think that it's probably a lot closer.
I think they're in the playoff race right now. They even may be in the playoffs to me, honestly. I think Randy Carlyle was such a huge drag.
This is something I tweeted about yesterday. The Canadians are outside of the playoffs the playoff spot in the East with 92 points, and there are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 teams in the West that have 92 points or less that are in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And three of those are in divisional spots, which says a lot about, you know, kind of how this thing has gone.
Montreal has more points than Vegas.
Yeah, they do. They have more points than Dallas. They have more points than Colorado. They have more points than Vegas. They have as many points as St. Louis, and they may miss the playoffs because they don't play in the right conference.
Yep. But I think Randy Carl, I honestly, though, one bad season isn't the worst thing in the world for this team if they can get a high pick that can reset this franchise for moving forward. So I think that all things considered, the frustration, it may have been worth it in the long run. Short term, it sucked.
I mean, the question really becomes, would the Ducks be 9 points better right now?
Yes.
Because that would have them in a playoff spot.
I think Randy Carlyle has a negative.
They are still only 9 points out.
Yeah. So, who is your dark horse team in the playoffs?
Ooh.
That comes from Lewis.
Love that question. I think that Vegas doesn't really qualify as a dark horse, so I'm going to go St. Louis.
They made the cup final last
year. I think St. Louis can win their first round against Nashville, and I think they can win their second round against Winnipeg as well.
It's not out of the question that they take the division.
It's not out of the question. Winnipeg has been downright awful since the trade deadline.
They're 2 points back. They're 2 points back of Winnipeg and Nashville.
Winnipeg has the 29th ranked Corsi 4 percentage since the trade deadline, and I don't care what you think about that stat. That's not good if you're aspiring to be a cup contender. Nashville has not been much better. They're about 15th. St. Louis, meanwhile, has been a very good possession team. They have a guy in Ryan O'Reilly who, you know, could conceivably shut down a top line for either of those teams. You know, he's been very good this season. He might be my Selke favorite outside of Sidney Crosby. We talked about that on the Patreon pod. So to me, St. Louis is easily my dark horse team. I don't really think so I'll give you another dark horse, but I don't know if they can be viewed as a dark horse. I think Washington might be able to do it again. If you look at the numbers, they've been very good. Very, very good in the last couple of months.
I just don't
know.
I like Carolina against them.
Oh, man, I don't know. Washington, all the things we like about Carolina in terms of their underlying numbers, Washington has been very good in that respect as well. But again, that's why it's a dark horse pick.
By the way, I do want to make mention, sorry for anyone out there that is extremely frustrated by this. Varluna pointed out to me, I had the scores wrong on our final score. I had it flipped. I had the Ducks 1, Oilers 5.
How dare you?
So, sorry.
How
sorry
dare
about
you?
That. It's not fixed.
So
it's
do you have a dark horse, or did I just kind of steal yours?
I think my dark horse, let's go with Dallas.
You think Dallas can win a round?
I think Dallas could win a round. I think especially if they can get Winnipeg. Like you said, Winnipeg has not been very good down the stretch here. And Dallas, with how good why am I spacing on their goalie's name right now? So
Ben Bishop.
With how Ben Bishop has played this year, I think you get good goaltending, you have a chance in any series. And I could see Ben Bishop helping them. They do have high-end talent. I think top to bottom, they're not as deep as a Winnipeg team, but I think that with good goaltending and high-end talent, they can maybe win that round.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Dallas could easily win. I think they can win a round against whoever they play. I don't know if I like them to go deep, but that's a fair dark horse. I think Vegas could. I mean, I think they could win it all. I think that there's just no one in the West right now is just so bulletproof. And so they're another dark horse for me. But that's a good question. That was a fun one.
Yep. So there was a question from Lewis. Hypothetical, this is not necessarily about the Ducks, but what would the package have to be for a team to get McDavid? Not necessarily the Ducks, just any team.
Oh, boy. I mean,
the entire farm system.
Yeah. I mean, think about the Carlson trade and how much that took, right, for a top player, and then just
double or triple.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be your next three first round picks. It would have to be your top prospect. I mean, it would have to be you wouldn't have much left after to make any other trades, but you get Connor McDavid. So it would have to be something like that.
Okay. Let's hit this question from Piggy7Swat. If Carlson isn't back with San Jose or for San Jose, could he be the next member of Swedenheim with the Kessler and Eves contracts looking like they're gone next season? Do you think the Ducks take a run at Erik Karlsson?
I mean, I think they should. I think we talked about this on our Patreon pod. I think that was the last. Yeah,
possibly.
I think we talked about this. And I think the Ducks should, because if a player of Carlson's ilk becomes available, it's kind of your job as a GM to see if you can get him on your team. That being said, I don't know how much sense he makes for this team, because they are in a bit in a retool. if you're signing Erik Karlsson, you're doing it to go win a cup, basically. And I think it's fair to start being concerned about the injuries. I mean, he's missed some time this season. He has a pretty checkered injury history. I still think that he's worth the price of admission, but I don't see him. It's so weird to say, but I don't see him as a fit for the Ducks, because that's going to make them too good to where they're going to be good enough to contend, but maybe not good enough to be favorites. Although, who knows? I mean, the Western Conference is so wide open.
And I think the Ducks, if they make that move, I think that they are legitimate contenders.
I mean, so, you know, maybe I take it all back. Maybe if you can get Erik Karlsson, why not? Go try and get him.
I think the injuries are a real concern. I think age potentially
he is 28
with how long that contract
is going to be. It's
going to
be a mega deal.
If you have a chance to get one of the best defensemen in hockey, I think you
one of the best ever.
Yes, I think you got to try to take a run at it. Let's go to this question from STFU Shane. We'll end with this. How excited are you that baseball is back?
I mean, I'm excited. I'm not that excited, but I am a casual baseball fan, and so it gives me something to pay attention to during the summer months.
I think I said this on Friday's pod, but I'm at that point with the Angels where it's just like I feel like every season I get so excited in the very beginning, and I get so hyped up, and then after basically a month or two of being on that kind of watching every game, living and dying with it, that I'm like, they just keep losing, and this is depressing to do this every single day. And I just kind of fall off, and it's like, all I want from the Angels is to keep me engaged. Keep me engaged until September.
I mean, they could win their division.
Make me care. Make me care until September.
They could do it. Anyway, I don't know who. Let's do a. This is going to be a recurring theme on the next couple podcasts. Let's do our 2 minutes of baseball. I actually want to ask you this. Who do you have as your favorite to win it all this year? And then who is your dark horse?
You're putting me on the spot because I have not paid attention to baseball in depth in a very long time, but let's go.
Okay. Well then you actually have a pick. Okay.
Let's go with, I would say probably the favorite with all the moves they've done would be the Phillies.
Really? You think they're the favorites?
I think that they've made a lot of moves to get a lot of really good players. I mean, people are probably going to yell at me that that's a completely bad take, but hey, yell
at
me.
It's not a great one.
Inform me that I'm wrong.
I think that my favorite...
I'm going to have Shane yell at me, I think, in the chat.
My favorite is probably the Astros. And then my dark horse... I mean, and I don't know if I need to explain that one. The Astros are very good. They have a great roster. They play in a division that they're probably easily going to win, unless one of the Angels or A's just has a very surprising season. And then my dark horse to win it all. I mean,
Shane's telling me it was a bad take, so I'm gonna
Do the Yankees count as a dark horse?
No. My dark horse. I'm gonna go with the Padres.
Padres.
Everyone's gonna
another
hate my
okay another
people,
dark
baseball.
Horse I have is the Rays, Tampa Bay. They were very good to end the stretch last season, and
they beat the Astros 3-4.
They play in a division that, kind of like the AL West, is a little wide open. I mean, I think that the Red Sox are going to fall off this year. I think the Blue Jays aren't good, and so why not these Rays? Why not these Devil Rays?
Boom. Shane's yelling at you saying the Rays are going to be in straight last this year.
Yeah, but see, the reason why I like the Rays is because they're the analytics darlings. So I have to go with them.
I'm going with the Padres because they're a dark horse. Just simply because they have some decent players. We'll see.
My approach to baseball is only look at the numbers. Only look at the numbers. Go to the occasional live game and read and listen to podcasts, read articles. So yeah, I only look at.
We're putting some people to sleep with our baseball.
No, this is good because it's how do we navigate a topic that we are both sorely lacking in,
lacking on, and pissing everyone off who cares about it? Like mainly Shane, who's a baseball.
I mean,
coach.
I'm guessing that a lot of our listeners are Angels fans.
Most likely,
I gotta say.
Oh, I remembered. I remembered who's a Mariners fan, who's a listener to the pod. Braden.
Oh, yes.
Sorry, Braden.
Yeah, I mean, the Mariners are 4-1. So maybe he's right to be a Mariners fan. I don't know. All right. I think that's going to do it for today's podcast. Thanks a lot for listening. Also. We're getting stick to hockey comments in the Twitch chat. So maybe it's time to just call this one. Thanks a lot for tuning in.
Well, let's make a soccer segment. That'll be better on.
But that one I have absolutely nothing to contribute to.
I mean, you know as much about soccer as you do baseball.
I would say I know more about baseball than soccer. Oh, I know more about soccer as a sport, but I follow baseball more closely.
Sure. As we've just had our takes exposed.
I mean, I also think that for soccer, if we really want to get into the soccer thing, I can tell you very confidently that I only look at the numbers for that, and numbers never lie.
Oh, by the way, Fish throws in the Twitch chat question for us on who we think is better, Carlson or Subban? Carlson.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love PK Subban, I think that debate is kind of settled, although I love PK Subban, and he might be a Duck next year, according to Jake. All right, guys. Any other random sport we want to opine on? College basketball?
I have not paid attention to that.
Big finish yesterday between Texas Tech and Virginia. Virginia somehow managing to not choke it again. They're Final Four bound. So, I mean, that's good. For the second year in a row, I forgot to save my bracket. And so in both of my leagues, it just says 0-0. Pretty depressing. I'm pissed.
What was there money on the line?
Yeah, there was money on the line. So I just lit money on fire, basically.
You just gave to charity.
Yeah, and the worst thing is in my work league, I'm actually managing our pool, our league. I'm the one who kind of set it all up, and I forgot to set my bracket. So there you go.
We're getting requests about curling and Formula One. Formula One. I think
Formula One. There was an event this weekend.
There was? I don't know. If we want to talk about surfing, I could talk a little bit of the World Surf League. John Florence,
yeah,
I think, is
today
ready to come back.
Was
the Gold Coast
Bahrain International Circuit. Lewis Hamilton, 25 points.
The Gold Coast first stop on the World Surf Tour, I think, is going to be coming up next weekend or this upcoming week in the Gold Coast, where I went for my honeymoon down at Snapa Rocks. Really nice right-hand wave at the Superbank. It's going to be a real fun competition to watch.
Yeah, we're going to have to do something to keep everyone entertained this summer. So I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do.
Do I try to teach you the intricacies of surfing?
Get on the board, ride the wave. Easy.
Yes, Lewis, they have a World Surf League.
Put
there's multiple
different
parts.
Put some wax in the board so you don't slip. Wear a wetsuit.
Yeah, so the Quicksilver Gold Coast Pro starts in 2 days.
Yes. So for all you surfing fans out there, don't miss it. It's a big one.
It's going to be fun to watch. First stop of the World
Varluna
Surf Tour.
Asking, this is a hockey-related question, how far can the Gulls go in the Calder Cup? I don't see them winning it.
I think if they have their full roster, they
can
win it.
There's just too many better teams. Although, yes, I mean, if they can just completely...
The thing is, we haven't watched their games to watch enough
well,
of their games
I,
to really
I
make
pay,
a full
I
statement.
Pay moderate attention to the AHL. And I think that there are, I mean, in the Gulls own division, there are just teams that are better.
Bakersfield
is very good. San Jose is good. I'm a little biased there, but they're both pretty good. But yeah, I mean, if the Gulls get the roster they're meant to have, then maybe they could do it. Maybe they could kind of be that surprise team. What is it? The top three from each division or the top four? That make the playoffs?
Top four.
Yeah. So, and is it one place four, two place three?
Yes.
So then the Gulls would be playing San Jose, which I don't see them winning that series. But again, if they get everyone back, would Max Contois be able to play in that?
If Drummondville is eliminated from the playoffs?
Yeah. So maybe we see a Max Contois cameo. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, too. It seems like Troy Terry may not be healthy enough to play in the playoffs. So that's why I'm saying,
he blocked a shot and had to leave the game. So you figure it's something bone related, not muscle, muscular.
Yep.
May mean he's gonna come out faster, but not in time for the playoffs, or not in time for maybe the end of the playoffs. All right, guys, We're spinning our wheels here. Thanks a lot for listening. We really do appreciate it, especially for everyone who tuned in live on this beautiful Sunday afternoon. Going to let you guys go off and enjoy that. We're going to go get our things done for the day. Jake has a beer league game at 4?
4:30.
Wow. That's very early for beer league.
It's amazing. I'm very happy about it.
So anyway, thanks a lot for listening, guys. We will catch you at the next podcast. That will be Wednesday night after the Ducks take on the Flames for what feels like the 10th time in 2 weeks.
I will be on site.
Jake will be at the game, so go say hello to him. And then the Ducks take on the Kings Friday night for the season finale. I'm holding off on our goodbyes. I'm not going to do it yet, but it's winding down. And so we'll talk to you then.
Bye.